compulsive hoarding is more complicated than just being extremely disorganized. Hoarding can be very serious and even deadly. The clutter in a home may reach such proportions that living spaces become uninhabitable. We're learning about this disorder on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Rafi Wald is a licensed psychologist and board-certified neuropsychologist. He's also an executive board member of the American Board of Professional Neuropsychology and was recently quoted in an article titled, Why Do We Hoard? Rafi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. How are you?
Doing well. Can you give us a definition, first of all? When does a person become a hoarder? What is hoarding disorder?
So as with everything in the field of psychology, it's all sort of shades of gray. The way that we define psychological problems in general is whether it's quote unquote clinically significant. So is the problem creating difficulties socially, emotionally, physically, medically for the person themselves or for family members?
What kinds of things do people hoard?
People hoard a lot of things. It really can be anything. It can be collectibles. One of the most common things that I see is newspapers, old newspapers and magazine articles. Very commonly, people collect those and believe that they're going to be worth a lot of money someday, so they don't want to get rid of them. Or they keep them as memoirs, memories from positive times in their past.
Their homes can also get out of control with the amount of things and the stuff, the boxes. What is the difference between someone who is hoarding and someone who is collecting and just extremely unorganized?
So again, the question becomes, has this reached a point that it's quote unquote clinically significant? And that is the measuring stick for most psychiatric illnesses. Are other people in the home feeling uncomfortable, feeling like their home is not their safe place anymore because of all the newspapers or other objects that people are collecting? Is it causing distress for the person? Is it making them more reclusive because they can't get out of their house easily? Is it causing medical problems because people are more likely to grow mold? And hoarders are more commonly people that are a little bit older. So people that are much higher risk of falls. So not only can it be a social, emotional, psychological problem, it can also be a medical or physical one.
What about the notion that someone has stuff and that they are collecting it because they might need it someday, that it's critical to hang on to it because they know they'll perhaps use it at some point?
And there's certainly normal collecting. Collecting memorabilia is certainly a normal thing to do. A lot of people do that. When I was a kid, I used to collect baseball cards. But the question, again, is, has your collecting reached a point where it's inhibiting yourself or other people around you from leading a normal, kind of a comfortable life? So certainly I'm not saying that I want people to stop collecting things that they enjoy. If they are concerned about hoarding, the question to ask yourself is my collecting stopping me from engaging in normal social activity? Is it upsetting people around me? Is it posing any kind of a fire hazard or a safety hazard?
Neuropsychologist Rafi Wald is with us as we discuss hoarding disorder. Have you ever struggled with throwing things away? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you know someone who hoards? How has it affected them or you? What is this relationship like? How have you dealt with it? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Who struggles with hoarding behavior? Break down the demographics for us.
Sure, absolutely. It's really not something that is restricted to one group of people, one ethnicity. It really affects people across a range of ethnicities and cultures. Again, more commonly as people get older, they're more likely to hoard, which is problematic because of the health risks that hoarding can pose. Interestingly enough, that right now we are on the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's basically the book of psychiatric illnesses that psychologists and psychiatrists use in order to make their diagnoses. So we're on the fifth edition of that. And up until this most recent edition, the most recent one was the DSM-4-TR. Up until this most recent edition, hoarding was considered, and traditionally always has been considered, as a subset of obsessive compulsive disorder. So obsessive compulsive disorder is a disorder that a lot of people sort of self-diagnose with. It consists of obsessions. You have thoughts, ruminations that you can't get out of your head, and compulsions, which are actions, rituals that a person engages in order to relieve some of the stress that relates to those obsessions. So you can sort of see where OCD and hoarding would be connected somewhat. But now with the advent of the DSM-5, we've separated hoarding disorder out from obsessive compulsive disorder. And I think one of the biggest differences is that in order to have hoarding disorder, you don't necessarily have to have the obsessions. You don't have to ruminate on something in order to hoard, even though hoarding itself is sort of like a compulsion. You engage in almost sort of an irrational behavior at a certain point, which relieves anxiety on a certain level.
Do we see histories and families of hoarding?
Yes, absolutely. There definitely is a strong genetic component, as there is to many, many psychiatric illnesses. But not only is there a biological component to it, but when family members see other people hoarding, it can become a learned behavior.
Let's go to Eric now, who joins us from Illinois. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just calling to reflect on the comment of hoarding. There's hoarding and there's significant collecting, and the fine line is real close. My mother was absolutely a hoarder, which stemmed out of a rejection from her mother. She gave me rejection all of my life, so I did a continuous collecting and working hard. I hit a point in my life 10 years ago where I was injured. I was going to let go of it all and move forward. My brother and sister shook me how terrible it was to let go of my things, how I couldn't do that. In that time, my mom also told me things make a value. In the time that I laid hurt and trying to recover, I lost all of the things that I had collected. Junk was replaced in the place of tools that I owned. And then after 7 years of it, I watched my mother pass. As my mother passed, my brother and sister took off after mom's estate, took houses, all kinds of significant value things. When we have a rejection in our family, we start looking to the material junk to fill that hole up.
Well, let's
material
get...
junk doesn't cause anything but more misery and suffering.
Eric, thank you. Let's get Rafi Wald to respond to that. Go ahead.
So I like the way that you phrased a lot of things, and I commend you because it's a really difficult thing to have a lot of insight into. It's usually with hoarding, it's something we call an ego-syntonic problem. In other words, it's a problem that the person themselves doesn't necessarily have issue with. It's the people around them that are concerned. So I think for you, Eric, to realize that there was an issue is really impressive. That's a great level of insight for you to have. I think what you're going into is some of the biological component to it, as you see a lot of other family members, and the learned component of it. And you can see the sorts of issues it can create and the sorts of havoc it can wreak among people. And also you're talking about more on an underlying level. So these days, the way that a lot of psychological problems are treated is through cognitive behavioral therapy, which is aimed at treating behavior rather than dealing with subconscious processes, because over the years we've found that that is the most effective way to do things. But there always is this subconscious childhood related component to things, and I think that's what Eric is dealing with. So I really just want to commend him. I think it's impressive the level of insight he has into the issue.
Do we see, Eric, thanks for the call. Do we see tendencies toward hoarding even at a young age? And do these tendencies grow stronger with age?
Like most personality characteristics, it definitely grows stronger with age. As I'm sure anybody who's listening here knows, people as they get older tend to become more and more rigid in their ways of looking at things. So if a person is a collector when they're young, normal collecting, if it goes on and becomes more of a hoarding type of an issue, then it can become more and more rigid over the years. And by the time a person reaches old age, after a lifetime of hoarding, it can be really, really difficult to pry them away from that issue. So it really is the sort of problem where a stitch in time saves nine. So you want to deal with the problem on the earlier end rather than later on. But yes, it can happen at any age. You'll see children, again, less common than older people, but you'll see children that hoard stuffed animals and refuse to get rid of them. It's for a very different reason than older adults might do that, but it is aimed at relieving an anxiety.
How much do these symptoms interfere with school, interfere with work, social life, family life?
It really can. I mean, in children, like I was saying, it usually is more the underlying anxiety that will cause problems with that the hoarding causes problems like of stuffed animals. If there's an underlying anxiety and the child collects stuffed animals to relieve that anxiety, a lot of times there's school refusal that goes along with that. So a child that won't go to school because of their anxieties. As people get older and older with the hoarding of newspapers and that sort of thing, it really can create problems. And it's when you're talking about occupational difficulties, it's less about the actual hoarding itself and more about the reason that the person is hoarding, meaning what is, like Eric said, what is the hole that that person is trying to fill by hoarding, and what kind of anxieties are they dealing with? And those anxieties are what ultimately can interfere with a person's ability to work the way that they want to. It's interesting, we don't give a lot of credit these days to Sigmund Freud's teachings. A lot of them are kind of kooky when we look at them. We all as psychologists learn a lot about them. But he used to say that a psychological problem is defined by whether a person is able to love and work. So you can see how hoarding could create problems in both of those areas.
Compulsive hoarding is associated with physical and emotional health risks. Being the caregiver of a hoarder presents a unique set of difficulties. Normal activities like preparing meals or house cleaning or assisting with activities of daily living become a lot more challenging with the clutter that takes over. We're learning about the root causes of hoarding and what can be done to help families deal with it. Neuropsychologist Rafi Wald stays with us. You can join in with your questions, your reflections on hoarding at 800-642-1234. Are you coping with hoarding? Do you know a loved one who is a hoarder? How has it affected your life and your relationships? Join in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return to the conversation in just a moment on the Ideas Network. In recent years, the medical community has come to recognize hoarding as a symptom of mental illness. There are people who risk their home, their health, and their safety by hoarding stuff. We're learning about the root causes and how to treat hoarding disorder this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Neuropsychologist Rafi Wald stays with us to help us better understand extreme hoarding, this enduring difficulty parting with possessions. You can join in with your questions about hoarding at 800-642-1234. Have you lived with a hoarder? Have you sought help? How are you coping? Join in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Kendra now, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kendra.
Hi there. My mother had a mild to moderate case of hoarding. She would have plastic bags, opaque plastic bags, she couldn't see in them, full of stuff. And, like, her basement, there was a path to get, you know, to where you needed to get the laundry and a few other places. But otherwise, it was full. And she also had an addition that had been built that had become full. The closets were full. All the closets in the house. I'm surprised that if a rod ever broke, that the clothes wouldn't just stay there due to how tightly they were packed in.
Kendra, how did this affect your relationship with her?
It was certainly a source of stress for me as I got older, and I have a little bit of the hoarding tendency, but it's certainly not that bad, and I would try and let her know that, you know, this is not normal, this is not good, that it feels good to free yourself of things. The amazing thing to me is she seemed to be visually organized, and in many cases, she knew the basic area where something was in amongst the ocean of bags you couldn't see in. I once found a piece of jewelry I had given her. It's like a $700 carnelian and gold pendant. It was in an opaque plastic bag with a bunch of old aprons as I was trying to organize things.
Kendra, thanks so much for your story. Let's get Rafi Weld to respond. Go ahead.
You know what I'm curious is, how did you go about resolving that issue, and how did you, I don't know if Kendra is still on the line with us.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
How did you go about resolving that issue?
It was not resolved until she was very ill and had spent a month and a half, I think, you know, in medical care. And in rehabilitation, I had two cousins who came all the way from California and helped me organize everything and get rid of a truckload of stuff. It was an intense weekend. It was a stressful weekend for me, but it was mostly taken care of at that point. But she, you know, she never talked about it. You know, she could see how clean her back room was. You could sit on the furniture in there. She never said a word.
Mm. And it didn't create any visible anxiety when she got home and saw that the house was clean?
I don't think so. But when she tried to get rid of things, she tried once when I was in high school to get rid of things. And basically, it involved looking in every bag and box, staring at the contents and contemplating it, sighing deeply, and then moving that package of stuff like 12 inches to one side. And this went on like to everything that was in the basement.
Kendra, right. Thank you so much for the call. And Rafi, any words there for people who are trying to maintain relationships with a loved one as they work through hoarding?
Sure, absolutely. The goal really always, that was a great call from Kendra, the goal really is to have the person gain insight into the problem themselves so that they can help be a part of the solution. You don't have to just tear them away from their house and clean everything out without their consent. Really, that's it. When it reaches a point where there's a lot of physical hazards and potential medical hazards like mold, that's the point at which you need to do it without the person's consent. But the goal is always to have that person involved in the process and help them see the benefit that they can have. And if you can reach that point where the person who needs help with the hoarding is a part of the cure to the problem, that's the best way to maintain your relationships with that, your relationship with that person.
Let's go to Dave now, who joins us from Northern Wisconsin. Hi, Dave.
Hey.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure what to say other than I guess I kind of know what the hoarding is about, even though I've never really labeled myself as that, at least in the past, but after many, many years here, I'm a bit overwhelmed by stuff. But my stuff is good stuff. I'm sure everybody says that, but, you know, I'm not the type that saves a bunch of garbage, at least not in my eyes. I'm more into tools, machinery, parts, things to make things, but it's just a bit out of hand.
Dave, thank you so much. And Rafi, do hoarders understand they are hoarding?
More often than not, people, especially as people get older, they don't realize that the quote-unquote collecting is an issue. There are a lot of little strategies. If you are a person that's concerned that your collecting has become hoarding, one really good method you can use, for example, if you have a storage closet and you have a lot of old tools in there, one thing you might do is take a little red sticker and put it on all the tools in there. And when you use that tool, you can take the red sticker off. And within a year or 6 months, and you can make that decision, if within 6 months you haven't taken the red sticker off of that tool, it's probably time to get rid of it. So that's one way to kind of check yourself and see, am I collecting things that I really don't need, or are these things that I really use?
Are there clinical things that can be done in the case of a family that hoards or someone who is hoarding? Can they seek psychiatric help?
Yeah, I would strongly encourage people to do that, especially when things reach a point where it's overwhelming for a family member. I'd like to come back to the treatment in just a quick second, if it's okay. You had mentioned earlier about caregivers, and caregivers for older family members are at a very high risk of depression, or at a very high risk of developing dementia themselves, or at a very high risk of physical and medical problems. So people that are caregivers really, really need to take care of themselves. And when you're dealing with all of the activities of daily living, and when I say activities of daily living, I mean cooking, cleaning your loved one, cleaning their home, taking care of their basic physical needs. When you're having to do all of those things for a loved one, having to fight about what that person is hoarding can make things much, much more difficult. So I really do encourage people, if you've reached that point, to seek the help of a professional who can sort of guide you through that process. In the most extreme cases, when a person hoards and they just can't get past the anxiety that comes along with getting rid of some of these things that they're hoarding, there is medication that is used. It's not a specific hoarding medication, but it's a medication that is typically used for both depression and anxiety. These medications are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, which are the most common medications that are used for this sort of issue. And you've probably heard of many of these medications like Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft. And again, in the most extreme situations, once a person is steadily on these medications, it can loosen things up a little bit to a point where the person that hoards is more open-minded to getting rid of things. And when a person is somewhat more open-minded to it, they can respond to talk therapy. As I had mentioned before, cognitive behavioral therapy, there's the cognitive component to it, which is trying to reconstruct the way that a person looks at issues in their lives. So helping them understand, you know, is it really going to cause problems in your life when we throw away this newspaper from 20 years ago? I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Could hoarding be masking other psychological problems such as bipolar disorder?
There almost always is some other sort of a psychological problem that goes along with it. Anxiety is one of the most common. Bipolar disorder, it just depends. Bipolar disorder is a huge range of different sorts of psychological problems. There are different forms of bipolar disorder. There's bipolar 1 disorder, in which a person, well, maybe I'll take a step back and just explain what bipolar disorder is in general. Bipolar disorder is a disorder in which a person has periods of depression where they experience sad mood, anhedonia, which is when they have a hard time enjoying things that they might normally enjoy. They either sleep way too much or they can't sleep at all. Their eating habits change. They have a hard time concentrating. They might have thoughts of suicide and death. They have feelings of guilt. They have limited motivation. Those are all symptoms of depression. And mania is essentially the opposite. So mania is when a person has way too much energy. They have a flight of thoughts. Thoughts just race in their minds. They have pressured speech. They speak too quickly. They might engage in risky behavior like promiscuity. They tend to spend a lot more money than they have. So there are different. So in order to have bipolar disorder, a person generally has some form of depression and some form of mania, but there are different forms of bipolar disorder. Bipolar 1 disorder, the person, the mania is typically more severe than the depression. Bipolar 2 disorder, the depression is usually more severe than the mania. And then there's something called cyclothymic disorder, in which neither problem becomes extremely severe, but neither problem becomes extremely severe, but both problems do exist. So there's sort of a mild depression, and there's what we call hypomania, which is a lower level mania. So when a person becomes depressed with bipolar disorder, it is very common them to have difficulty taking care of their activities of daily living, like throwing out garbage that they should be getting rid of, throwing out old newspapers. And when a person is manic, they might become excited and enthused about the idea of collecting something that they don't necessarily need. There's sort of this excitement in doing things that people with mania have, which is why they might spend money that they don't have. They might engage in risky behaviors like drug use. So there certainly is an increased risk of hoarding when you have a person with bipolar disorder. Both the depression and the mania can, to an extent, lead a person to hoard.
We're talking with neuropsychologist Rafi Wald this hour. Your questions are welcome about hoarding at 800-642-1234. What's been the most difficult thing in your experience with hoarding or living with someone who hoards? Is there something you want people to better understand about hoarding? Be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Amanda from Madison called, couldn't stay with us. She wonders whether hoarding is a modern problem or if we can trace it back decades or even centuries.
Can trace it back a long, long way. This isn't a brand new problem, but it's certainly diagnosed much more frequently today than it was in the past, because over time we've gained more insight into it. It's like a lot of different psychological problems. We diagnose depression more frequently than we did 60 years ago, A, because we have better insight into it, and B, because people are less afraid to come forward when they suffer from depression, because there's less of a stigma. Unfortunately, there is still way too much of a stigma attached to mental illness in general. But as with most psychological problems, they are more diagnosed now than they have been in the past, even though they were present in the past. So it's something that we gain more and more insight into. And as we gain more and more insight, we see more and more of it, because family members say, hey, you know, that sounds a lot like my mom, and maybe there's something that we can actually do about it rather than just worrying every day that she's going to trip and fall and hurt herself on one of those newspapers that's laying around in the house.
Speaking of newspapers, Anne from Madison called. She says she hoards newspapers because she wants to be able to look back at past events and see what happened. She says things are moving so rapidly these days that she keeps those newspapers, but then they end up piling up everywhere.
So then a question I have is that is part of the reason that she's keeping them for the residual value, because there are ways, if that's not one of the reasons, and it's strictly because she wants to be able to look back on things that have happened in the past, there are ways for us to reduce that clutter without having you forget those memories and being able to look back the same way you do now. If you're not afraid of the technology, if you're willing to have someone help you with the technology, there are ways to scan those newspapers in. There are ways to take pictures of them in a way that you can always look back and read, and that way you get the best of both worlds, where you can see all the stories the way that you wanted to, but you don't have the clutter in your home anymore. So if it's something that she would be open-minded to, that is one route that she could go.
Let's go to Greg now, who joins us from Waukesha. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I have a question. Has anyone ever reported in the literature that there might be some propensity of stamp collectors to hoarding? That's the first question. The second question is, I am a stamp collector, and when I go to stamp shows, one of the kind of underlying jokes that people will converse about is that there's a collecting gene, a stamp collecting gene. Mm-hmm. And I'll take your response on these.
All right, Rafi, what do you make of that to stamp collectors?
Sure. I don't know that I've seen anything specifically in the literature about stamps, but there definitely is, not that it's been identified, but there is that quote-unquote stamp collecting gene. There is a biological component to collecting, just the same way there's a biological component to anxiety and depression, even though all of these things are very treatable. So stamp collecting is a little bit less common of an issue that we see just because stamps are so small and they take up so little space. And, you know, you can keep hundreds of them in one small little book. So we definitely see a lot of that. In order for a person to have a major hoarding problem with stamp collecting, it would be need to be a huge volume of stamps. But certainly it could become a major problem. And again, it comes down to that question of whether it's causing clinically significant distress. Is it interfering with your ability to live your life the way that you should be living it? Is it causing distress to your loved ones? Is it creating the potential for any physical or medical problems? So although stamp collecting is a little bit less common to be associated with hoarding, it certainly can lead that way. Yes, absolutely.
Greg, thanks for that call. Let's go to Susan now in Madison. Susan, hi.
Hi. I didn't tune in from the beginning, so I don't know if you've already touched on the fact that hoarding disorder is now considered a distinct disorder. That was
yes,
a big deal
did.
To me to read. Okay, I guess you did, because,
oh,
I mean,
please.
I have a son with it.
Susan,
yes,
go
I'd
ahead.
To,
yeah.
I'd love to hear how it has affected you, meaning your insight onto why it being a distinct disorder from obsessive compulsive disorder, how that has affected you.
Well, you know, I can't say that I've made great use of it practically. My particular son is in his 30s, and I still hope to make better use of it. He is getting some services, but no one has diagnosed him with this. We're in different states, but I intend to keep working on it. But it's just such a relief because, for one thing, it increases tolerance in me, and I can tell his siblings, look, he fits this profile. Besides the hoarding, he's indecisive about, you know, major life decisions, and he does have trouble actually organizing his belongings and his time. And so instead of people acting like, you know, this hoarding aspect of him can just be changed, if they'll just talk to him enough, you know, they could understand that he's acting in character for a certain disorder, and we should be tolerant and treat it that way.
Susan,
sure.
Thanks. Yeah, Rafi, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very common thing we see as well, is it's a question of whether what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Does a person become more and more disorganized because they're hoarding and it becomes impossible to organize all of their belongings, or do they start to hoard because they are disorganized and they just kind of have a tendency to not throw stuff away because they have some difficulty taking care of their personal belongings? And it, in my experience, it goes both ways. Sometimes people become more disorganized because they hoard, and sometimes they hoard because they're more disorganized. And I think the advice that I would have for you is, your son is in his 30s, he's still relatively young, is to get on it now, because the older he gets, the harder and harder it's going to be to pry him away from those tendencies.
Hoarding disorder appears to be present in between 2 and 5% of the population, making it more prevalent than schizophrenia. We're learning how to cope with compulsive hoarding and what families can do to help. Neuropsychologist Rafi Wald is with us. Your questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. What's been the most difficult thing in your experience with hoarding or living with a hoarder? Is there something you want people to better understand? Be part of the conversation on air at 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back in just a moment. hoarding can affect every aspect of a person's life, including their overall well-being, their hygiene, and their social interactions. When a loved one suffers from severe hoarding, their homes can be filled to the brim with miscellaneous junk, sometimes to the point that moving around within the home is nearly impossible. We're learning about what hoarding disorder is and how to find help on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Neuropsychologist Rafi Wald is with us. He's an executive board member of the American Board of Professional Neuropsychology and was recently quoted in an article titled, Why Do We Hoard? You can join in with your questions, your observations on hoarding at 800-642-1234. Have you or a loved one coped with this? When did you realize it was time to seek help? Have you tried to hide hoarding disorder? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Amber now, who joins us in Madison. Hi, Amber.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, my question was that a friend of mine dated a woman a few years back who had some hoarding issues. I love neuropsychology. I have my undergrad in psychology. She had a tendency to hoard, food, old items that were obviously, molded, some things decomposing. She had a history of domestic abuse in her past. And I found that really interesting. It was directly after she left the abusive relationship and sought treatment, started going to therapy. But eventually she ended up not having power for 5 months, and the apartment eventually caught fire and burnt down. Luckily, she was not in the – her child and her were not in the apartment. But what do you do in that situation, especially when there's a child involved?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, and I think in most psychologists and psychiatrists' opinion, the second there becomes a medical hazard that's posed, you have to take action, whether it's with or without that person's, not necessarily their consent, but even if they are opposed to it, it's time to take action and try to get that person into a safe situation, whether that means that the home might be condemned once it reaches a certain point. That certainly does happen. Might mean that they need a new living arrangement. It might mean that they need help cleaning things out. But the second there's a medical problem that is potentially laying in the wake, you have to take action. It's an interesting thing. One thing I wanted to say is that to have a person that was abused in their past and then later on they begin to hoard. So one of the issues with hoarding is that people that live with other people that hoard tend to not feel safe in their homes. Not feeling safe in your home, especially for children as they grow up, can be associated with a range of psychological problems. And that can mean anything. If a child goes to sleep in a room where there are nails sticking out of the wall, then they might not feel safe in their room. If they are victims of physical, emotional, sexual abuse, or negligence, anytime a person does not feel safe in their home, especially in childhood, it leads to a range of psychological problems. And unfortunately, some people that have a history of living in an unsafe home might go ahead and repeat the problems that they've experienced in the past, in the present. So she has been subject to living in an unsafe place in the past, and now she has to do the same again because she's hoarding. So I hope that she's able to find someone to help her break through that cycle of issues that she's experiencing.
Amber, thanks for the call. Let's now go to AJ in Columbus. Hi, AJ.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I have a friend, and she's a hoarder, so that explains why she hasn't invited me over to her place for years. So when I finally did get to go over there was just stuff everywhere. And while I was there, her husband called, and I overheard her saying to her husband, my friend is here, and she's being very gracious. She understands. And she has, we have four children, and this three-year-old was in the room, and she was coming out of the room, and there was an item on the floor, and I quickly removed it for safety, and I felt very uneasy. you know. So I just wanted to know, like, how do I start that conversation with her, with my friend?
That's a great question. Let me ask you, in your mind, if you picture yourself having that first conversation, if you were to phrase it in the best way possible, how do you think she'd respond to it?
I really don't know. I would like to think that she would be open, but at the same time, be very, very guarded.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the first step usually is to have, if there is a physical risk of harm, the first step is to have a conversation with the person. You always want to get together with someone and run your idea off of someone else and just talk about what the best possible way to phrase things is. But if there is a risk of physical or medical harm to someone, that really is the point at which you need to take action. So have a conversation with a close friend and try to come to an understanding, and maybe the two of you can figure out the best way to do that. You want to do it in such a way that you're not making that person feel attacked or painted into a corner in any way. But that's really, for me, always the last step is someone has to take action when there is a risk of physical or medical harm to anyone in the home. So get together with a close friend, a mutual friend, and go over this thing, but try to have that conversation in the best way possible. That's my advice.
AJ, thank you so much for the call. Dale from DePeer emailed, and he says, I'm an environmental health specialist with a local health department where becoming involved with hoarding cases when living conditions become unsafe due to the lack of water, fire safety hazards, and more. The person owns the home and is deemed competent, but at the same time, the hoarder is unable to overcome the psychological barriers to part with materials overtaking the house. How do you handle hoarding issues from a public health standpoint?
So that's always, of course, I'm not sure exactly what the laws would be in Wisconsin, but that's if there is a risk of physical or medical harm and the authorities need to get involved because of that risk of physical or medical harm, then that really would be subject to those authorities. And I have had experiences, like I mentioned before, when homes have been condemned, and then really it's out of the hands of the person that it's out of the hands of the person that is hoarding. So this is one of those situations, again, where a stitch in time saves nine. The earlier on you can catch it, the better your chances are of being able to deal with it. Once a person has been hoarding for years and years and years, more often than not, in my experience, you really just have to rip them away from their belongings, and it can cause a great deal of grief and angst. So once the authorities have to become involved because of risk of physical or medical harm, you're really in a very extreme situation at that point. And that, of course, would always be subject to the laws of the state and the local government as to what they're allowed to do in that situation.
Rafi Wald, is compulsive hoarding completely solved, though, by simply cleaning out a home?
No, definitely not. What you do by cleaning out the home is you help the person understand that they're still going to survive and they're still going to be okay. They're not going to die. They're not going to pass out. Once their house is actually clean, life is going to go on and they're going to be okay. But there always is the potential that that person might start hoarding or collecting again. But one of the goals with cognitive behavioral therapy, which is the method of psychotherapy that most psychologists and psychiatrists use more often than not, is to help a person understand that if their worst fear comes true, it's really not going to be that horrible a thing, right? So if you live in a house that is dirty and filled with old newspapers or filled with any form of collectible that's making your family members uncomfortable, if we clean all that stuff out, you're going to be just fine. And sometimes forcing a person through that process can help them understand that things are going to be fine, the same way that if a person has a fear of going up on bridges, The treatment is sometimes you might do it gradually. You might expose them to heights slowly and gradually. And sometimes, depending on the circumstances and the person's medical and psychological history, you might just bring them up on the bridge and they might have a half an hour or an hour of extreme discomfort. But over time, they learn that things are going to be okay up on that bridge and they're not going to die. They're not going to pass out. Everything is going to be okay in the end. So cleaning out the house does go a long way. It doesn't necessarily fix the problem on any level if there's underlying anxiety or depression or any other underlying psychological problem there.
Let's fit in one more call here. Let's go to Joan in Madison. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. Yes, I'd like to know, you read or hear on TV or in the paper about people who hoard, but they also have all these cats and they live with all this feces all over their house. What's wrong with these people?
Joan brings up hoarding animals. What do we know, Rafi, about hoarding animals?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you're hoarding animals, you're jumping a bunch of steps and you're right away into an area where there is potential for medical problems, specifically because of feces. People that hoard are, like I had said earlier, tend to be a little bit less organized, tend to be a little bit less capable mentally and physically of cleaning up feces and cleaning up their home and keeping it sanitary and healthy. So you've jumped a bunch of steps once you're hoarding animals, and now you're very quickly into a situation where things pose a medical risk. It tends to be the same sorts of issues that can lead to hoarding animals. It can be underlying anxieties. A person's trying to fill a void. A person worries about what might happen if some of these objects or animals are taken away. But that's usually a very serious situation that requires intervention as quickly as possible, especially because, you know, cat feces can cause really serious health problems, especially in people that are pregnant. That's an issue you want to get on as quickly as possible, but it's the same general idea. Unfortunately, it just, you're replacing newspapers with cats or dogs or birds or whatever else it might be.
Rafi, in the final seconds we have with you, what could be one positive step to help someone who is coping with hoarding, or a possible prevention step as well?
Sure. It's have a conversation. Just have a conversation with the person that you're concerned about and gauge their readiness for change. This really is all about readiness for change. So the same way that if a person is smoking, if they're not ready to quit smoking themselves, no matter what you do, they're not going to get to the point where they'll do it. It works the same way with hoarding. If a person is not ready in their own minds, then it's going to be extremely difficult to get them to the point where they're willing to do it. Have a conversation, engage their readiness for change. If they're not ready for change, you might need to seek some sort of professional help.
Rafi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Rafi Wald is a licensed psychologist and board-certified neuropsychologist. He's also an executive board member of the American Board of Professional Neuropsychology, was recently quoted in an article titled, Why Do We Hoard? This Hour of the Morning Show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Ideas Network.